workshop equipment you need on the go. Download the new Worth app today. The value of coin increased by 2 cents today to $3.51. What is your coin worth today? Summer Breakfast.
Very good to be with you. Summer Breakfast here on SEN. David King and Jack Heverin. You can join us across the show, of course, 1300 736 736 and on the text 0433 98 11 16. Still to come today, Shane McInerney will join us. We'll talk about the game as it stands right now from an umpire's perspective. And Curtis Sardi, who coached Josh Green as a junior, will join us a little bit later on as well. Pick number 18 in yesterday's NBA draft. We're here with thanks to Coin. Shop local with coin.com.au and win. And we'll take a bit of a temperature check a little later on, Kingy, which is some of the fallout of the rule changes and who said what yesterday. It was an interesting day to sort of sit by the radio and just have Twitter going, all that sort of stuff, to see what everyone had to say. Differing views, I suppose, coming out of yesterday.
Yeah, and that's the game. That's our game in a nutshell, isn't it? We can all sit there and watch the same game, see different things, assess what we like and what we don't like. Whether you like the current game or you don't like the current game is up for discussion. Some people go harder than others. I don't think the changes were that radical, to be perfectly honest. So I don't think there's much to digest outside the fact that we just have to work out where we're going. What do we want the game to look like and work back from there? We seem to be making all these changes and hoping we end up at the right point.
Has there been any fallout from Mason Cox? Any more fallout from the man that you called the professional manner of the mark yesterday?
That's one of his primary functions.
You didn't say one of yesterday.
No, I said it's probably his main function.
Let's hook into our conversation starter for Kia. The all-new Kia Sorento has landed. I've got your back. Yeah. You know that. I've got your back. We're going to talk about the Kangaroos today. It's a really crucial time for the club. They've got a coaching role that needs to be filled, and there's a subcommittee that's going to work and doing all of the interviewing as we speak. But I suppose, Kingy, before we flesh out the candidates, holistically, it does feel like this decision's crucial, and then the next 12 to 24 months is pretty crucial for the club as well.
Yeah, I think it's important, and I feel every blow because I'm a Kangaroos fan. I think you've got to separate existence from performance. There's two different things. The Kangaroos are going nowhere. They've got the second stage or the next stage of the development of the building and the premises happening in the next short term, the whole redevelopment of that area. They're going nowhere. Financially, they've never been in a better position than where they are right now, which sounds stupid, and they'll make a profit again this year in the toughest year that everyone's had from a business point of view. So don't worry about the existence of the Kangaroos. This is a decision about performance, about getting the game plan and getting the club back winning games of football and developing, you know, their best people that they probably can, whether it's staff or players or whatever. That's what it's all about. So they've got to choose the coach that can correct that, not to save the place from going to Tasmania or going out of...
It doesn't feel like it needs saving, to be honest, does it?
Well, that's what... It sort of always comes to, if they get this wrong, they'll end up in Tassie. That discussion for me, I don't find a real... I don't agree with that discussion. It has no logic at all. So you look at the three candidates that are left, and they offer different things. Yeah? Mm. So clearly it's going to end up being a first-time coach. That's the way it's going to fall. Now, you've got David Noble, who's the front runner at the moment, who's done everything in the game, who's been bits and pieces of every phase and every role that the game has to offer. Does he have the absolute coaching acumen of the other two? I would say no. We haven't seen it, and he hasn't lived that for some time. And it's the Chris Fagan mould. It's the older guy, the experienced head, someone who can come in and take a few bullets while we reset. And over the next couple of years, it's going to be tough in the wins and loss column. And then you've got the other two, Rob Harvey, absolute master of strategy, great individual one-on-one coach, and I'm sure would have a great impact on so many of these young Kangaroo players, how to train, how to live, how to play, set standards. And then you've got Daniel G and Syracuse, who's probably competent in that area, but is great with relationships and a great a mate, if you like. He'd be a player's coach.
Would he be a young player's coach? Because that's going to be the demographic for North Melbourne's list for the next few years, isn't it, to be quite young?
Yeah, there'll be a lot of youth come in over the next couple of drafts, but there's still a core of senior players there that, you know, six or eight players that are going to be really important showing the way. So I think that the three candidates offer totally different points of difference. So how do you decide what you want as a football club? And well, that's where they're at right now.
Well, I guess the first step, and they would have gone through this process, Glenn Archer and Brady Rawlings and the subcommittee that North Melbourne have had assembled. Paul Roos is doing some work on that too via correspondence. I suppose the first thing in that instance, King, and you tell us, but do you start with what do we want out of a coach? What's the very first starting point when you're starting to, before you even begin interviewing people?
Yeah, what do we need?
Yeah.
What works for the North Melbourne Football Club? And it may be different from other clubs, from other football clubs. It clearly is. Yes, it's important because, you know, we've unfortunately put Reece in a position which challenged him to some degree in 2020, and hasn't gone to plan, and unfortunately that hasn't worked for anyone. So you can't afford for that sort of situation to happen again. We can't be looking in 12, 18 months to be replacing this next guy. We just can't be there. So it is important. This is why it comes back to David Noble for me, just because of sheer experience and having seen challenge at a whole host of football clubs before. And he has the experience, I think, to take the media side of it really well. You know, there's going to be some challenging questions. There's going to be some times where we're probably going to underperform over the next 12 months or so. Yeah. And he'll be able to sit there and in a really measured and calm way say, yep, this is going well, that's not going so well, blah, 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 and educate us on the run. And I think David Noble is a Kangaroos kind of guy.
What does that mean?
You get what you see.
Yeah, okay.
You know, this is a guy that's been around struggling footy clubs, and then he's gone to the Brisbane Lions and had a major impact on what they've done the last couple of years. So the players will say, well, he's got the answers. You know, absolute understanding of the game is not a separating factor anymore in a coaching appointment, because you just have to accept that they all know the game. They all know strategy. So you can't ask one magic question to Rob Harvey and ask that same question to Daniel G and Siracusa and have their answer say, well, he knows more about it than him. It's just not like that, because we all see the game differently, have different philosophies.
And I think we've had some appointments in the past, haven't we, where master tacticians look like the right way to go, but they couldn't build relationships. They knew the game back to front. They knew every single nook and cranny of it, but they couldn't get any of the players to play for them.
So it's important. I think you'll get a decision this weekend.
Do you really?
Yeah, I'd be surprised if they didn't already know, to be honest. I mean, the last interview of each was done Wednesday and Thursday. I think the two, I think Rob Harvey and Daniel G and Siracusa, I think we re-interviewed Wednesday, and David Noble yesterday. So I think you'll get an answer pretty quick. I wouldn't be surprised if as we said, you know, if you make your move at the clock tower at Flemington, the clock tower is probably, you know, this afternoon, tomorrow. I think that I genuinely think on Monday when we catch up next, we'll be saying that David Noble's probably the Kangaroos coach.
Well, David Noble would know full well, because he was such a major part of the rebuild at Brisbane, that it's more than just him though, isn't it? So this, he's lucky, whereas at Brisbane they didn't have this. He came in as the footy manager. There's a solidified footy manager in Brady Rawlings. But does he need to start to, or would he have already start to think about what the rest of his team is going to look like? Because there's not much left of North Melbourne's coaching staff right now.
No, and he may not get it first year. I mean, this is a long-term, you know, hopefully, I say hopefully, but this is a vision that you've got to have that's a 4 or 5 year plan. And he may not end up with what he wants tomorrow, and he may not end up with it for 12 or 18 months. But yeah, I think first and foremost, you've got to say, this is what your football club should look like. This is how the hierarchy should fall. These people are responsible for those decisions. Let them make those decisions. Mm. We're responsible for this. Let us do that. And just everyone do their own role. I think there's been too much overlap and too much confusion. But I've got no doubt that the guys have, and I differ to a few others, and I get that. I've got no doubt the guys they got there now, give them some time. They've been there 5 minutes, and you're talking about, you know, Mafio and Rawlings and the new list build, the new management team there, and clearly a new coach. Give them some time, and I'm sure that things will work out as they always do for the Kangaroos in their own way.
In their own way. 1-300-736-736 to join us. Our conversation starter for Kia, the all-new Kia Sorento, has landed. If you were put in charge, who would it be? Would it be David Noble? Would it be Robert Harvey? Would it be Daniel G in Syracuse? 1-300-736-736.
And you've got to nominate why. What's the separating factor? Like, no one knew who Alistair Clarkson was until he became Alistair Clarkson. So sometimes it's not necessarily right in front of you.
He was third in line, wasn't he, Clarko, for that job?
Yeah, with Terry Wallace and Rodney
Eade. Rodney Eade, yeah.
So, I mean, the decisions that requires a little bit of, at the end, a little bit of guesswork.
I think they all do, don't they?
Yeah.
In one way, shape or form.
Yeah.
What does Daniel G and Syracuse get out of the process? But people say, you quite often hear that it's good to go through the process. What does he get out of being involved in this?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Are you damaged by not getting the role at that age, or are you better for the experience? Mm. I don't have the answer, and maybe Daniel has a better understanding of that answer today than what any of us do. Does it damage Rob Harvey going for another role and missing out? Or is it just the set of circumstances that the Kangaroos are chasing? Probably this time, probably need a more experienced football person that's seen a few different things and lived a few different roles. Or does he get the job? I mean, we don't know who's got the job or who is going to get the job.
No, we're following what it looks like.
Are you damaged if you miss out is the question I ask.
It seems as though if there was a bullet flying around for Daniel G and Syracuse, it feels like at the moment it'd just brush off. Because he's so young, he's 6 years into his assistant coaching journey. He's just made the move. He's been at the one club his entire life. He's going to be with Essendon this year. But just from the outside looking in, King, it doesn't really feel as though G will take any sort of wound from this, will he? He'll, in fact, if anything, it's nice to have been in the conversation, perhaps.
Yeah, I think your first one everyone's pretty positive about. But then your second and third. So how many would Rob Harvey have gone for? He would have gone for two or three?
Yeah, I think he got deep. I'm going back now. He got deep in the St Kilda conversation at least once, if not twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that becomes a problem, doesn't it? And everyone goes back to the Brian Royal discussion, where Brian probably went for six or seven interviews and just never quite got over the line. How long before the next wave of coaches come through and you get swallowed up by the next batch?
Or is the next wave going to be put on the back burner a little bit? Because will more clubs be looking for a David Noble, Chris Fagan type of figure?
There's not many out there, though.
Will we
there?
See a bit of a switch and a bit of a trend where for a little while there we wanted coaches virtually fresh out of the game? Will we see it go another way maybe where you need to have a gamut of experience, not just coaching but list management and footy management and development and all sorts of things like that?
Fascinating. And I think we've all got our own thoughts and our own philosophies, but it is a big job, and it is a 2 to 3 year process to get the list sorted. And in that phase, you've just got to make sure you're taking everyone along for the ride. And the Kangaroo fans, and I get a lot of feedback from them, they're not afraid of the not the struggle, but the challenge to be maybe not the one of the haves, to be a have not, but to then still achieve. So that's the challenge, to get back there. I mean, everyone talks about Leicester winning the EPL a couple of years ago and how hard that is for a club like that. Well, that's what we love. That's why we're so passionate about our footy club.
Craig's in St Albans. Craig, what are you making of the North Melbourne coaching situation? Who's the right candidate in your mind and why?
Morning, boys. Look, probably out of the three, David Noble. But, David, I ask a question. Out of those three with the experience, I can't work out why there isn't a Mark Williams or a Gary Ayres, somebody that's been there and done it and been through all the stuff these blokes are going to have to go through.
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't have the answer, Craig, to be honest with you. I'm not close enough to it. But I think that they would have inquired about some of those guys. And then you make an assessment. Okay, we're going down this path.
Yeah,
we're choosing. See, I threw up Mick Malthouse and Mark Williams at the start, just for someone that can come in and handle the situation, even if it's only for a couple of seasons, to get through the hard yards, to do the heavy lifting, whilst you don't subject a young coach, a Daniel G in Syracuse, doesn't get subjected to the 2 years of pain that are probably coming.
Paul Roos and Simon Goodwin, isn't it, really?
That sort of, just have someone that's one step removed that may be your next coach. I don't love the succession plan. I don't love the handover period of the, you know, Worsfold Rutten style or even the Roos Goodwin style. I don't really love that. Don't know if that works. Who's your boss? You got two masters. It's a difficult thing to live. But I didn't mind the older, more experienced Mark Williams, Mick Malthouse style coach coming in for a short period of time. And if they did a great job, you can keep going.
Mm.
I mean, just because of their birth certificate doesn't mean that, you know, it does in Australia, unfortunately. Overseas, not so much. But I would have endorsed something like that. I don't know whether they wanted to do it. I actually don't know whether Mick Mildhouse would want to do it. But if he did, it would, be, in my opinion, be a perfect role.
It's our conversation starter for Kia. The all-new Kia Sorento has landed. 1-300-736-736. More on this on the other side of the break. And David Noble spoke at the start of the trade period about where he stood. We'll share that with you on the other side of it as well.
I was born. The Worth app makes ordering your workshop consumables and products a breeze. Download it today. The value of coin increased by 2 cents today to $3.51. What is your coin worth today? Summer Breakfast.
Thanks for being with us on Summer Breakfast. David King and Jack Heverin. It's all for coin. Shop local with coin.com.au and you can win. Yesterday, Kingy, we touched on it already. It was a fabulous, fabulous day for Australian basketball with the drafting of LaMelo Ball with pick number 3 after spending a professional season playing in Australia, or half of a professional season in Australia. RJ Hampton going in the draft yesterday as well. And Josh Green going to the Dallas Mavericks. Some beautiful synergies with the Mavericks and Australian basketballers as well. His coach is a junior, Curtis Sardi, who's also the Basketball New South Wales high performance coach, has been good enough to join us this morning. Curtis, thanks for your time.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me.
You must be very, very proud of your boy.
Yeah, he's very proud moment yesterday for basketball in Australia, but definitely for us at Basketball New South Wales, definitely.
And went a few slots earlier. There were many suspecting that he'd be somewhere in the 20s, but pick 18 is a really nice result for him, and Dallas is a really nice result for him as well.
Yeah, I think a lot of intel recently was anywhere between the 14 to 25 mark. But yeah, I thought, just on my personal opinion, I thought he was a bit higher in that. But obviously, we saw yesterday a lot of guys go later or earlier than expected, Josh being one of them. But yeah, I really think it's a good fit for him. And I think he's going to blossom there for who he is and the way that Dallas play. It's going to be great for him in Australian basketball.
Curtis, a huge day. There's no doubt about that. Can we go back a fraction? When did you know that Josh Green could be this good?
I suppose a bit personal for me because I've known the family for longer than when I had the opportunity to coach him. And from a little 5, 6, 7-year-old, he was always down the sideline, 2 basketballs, like doing more things than any of the normal 5 or 6-year-old would be doing. But I think it probably hit home pretty close at the under-16 Nationals as a 13-year-old when he was doing some of the things that he was doing, and people could just see, yeah, he's going to be special. I thought he was always going to be in the NBA. I didn't know when, where, how, what number draft, who he'd play for, but I think there's a lot of us here at home that knew he would be good enough to play in the NBA.
So when you say he was doing things, I'm a basketball novice. What sort of things specifically would he be doing?
I remember when his dad, Delmas, was coaching me as a child. Josh would be asking Dad, hey, what can I do, Dad? Can I play? And then obviously he was a lot younger than us, but Dad would get him doing two dribbles down the sideline, alternating basketballs as a 5, 6, and 7-year-old with a size 5 and size 6 basketball. He'd be shooting hoops in a full-size ring. Josh would run all day. He'd do push-ups. He'd do sit-ups. Like, he was always an athletic and active person, but just really just competed very hard as a 6 and 7-year-old, even though it was against himself or just doing things that Dad would ask him to do.
Curtis, not every junior basketballer coming through, and particularly when they get to the NBA, pride themselves on defense. And many want to be the glitz and the glamour, and they want to post the big numbers, and they want their box score to look nice and fat. Very much the opposite, isn't he, Josh? He does pride himself on the defensive side of his game.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the nail on his head since he's been playing at a representative level at Penrith with us. As a Basketball New South Wales athlete, when he was selected early as a 12 and 13-year-old, that's what everybody loved about him, his tenacity on the ball. He prided himself on being the best defender in the team, whether it was in a program, a team for Penrith, or at a BNSW event where we'd have, 100-plus athletes. He'd always want to be the best on-ball defender. And then from that, he'd go and break out and run and transition. And, you know, he'd obviously finish flashy at the rim, and obviously he's gotten older. He's been able to do some pretty outrageous dunks and things at the ring. But literally just guarding the best players, blocking shots, rebounding, getting deflections. The biggest memory for me was at the under-16 Nationals when we played ACT in one of the first games of the tournament. He subbed in, and the Boomers coach at the time, along with our head coach, was sitting on the sideline, and he had 7 deflections in the first half just by being ready and ready to go on defense, and he came off the bench. So just all those intangible things that people don't see as a fan, but he just, yeah, that's who he is as a person and how he's built his career.
Reading that 5 years ago he was on the GWS Academy program. Was it ever realistic that he was going to take the AFL path?
I think it was probably more realistic as a primary school student, where he'd made the PWSA New South Wales side, and from there opportunities had come. When he was playing for the team I was coaching at Penrith, we'd always encourage him to do both. I think deep down, as mum and dad were both basketballers and his older brother were basketballers, I think it was always going to fall in the basketball side of things. But I mean, you know, he picking up and moving definitely helped that, because obviously there is no Aussie rules over there. But I still deep down think he would have chosen basketball if he was given NBA or AFL, you know, as an 18 or 19 year old.
So how will he handle this, Curtis? You've known him and the family for a very, very long time. As you rightly point out, they are a big basketball family. How will this experience sit with the Green family as a whole?
I think it's going to go down really well. I think the right situations happen for them. They're good people. The way that Delmas and Carlo raise their kids, the situation has just fallen into place the right way, and Josh will just excel here. He'll go there. He will work his butt off. I will not be surprised if we see at some point in the next season where he starts in that Dallas team. He may have to earn it at the start, but he will work his tail off to prove to everybody that he deserves his spot, and he'll do Australia and New South Wales proud in the NBA this year, I think.
Really, really good stuff to hear. Curtis, well done. You played a pivotal role. You'll play it down, obviously, but you've had a pivotal role in Josh's development. So congratulations on the work you've done, and thanks for joining us today.
No problem. Thanks for having me. And it's great news for Australia basketball this year, today especially. So, look forward to seeing him playing in the Olympics for us, hopefully.
Yeah, I hope so too, Curtis. I agree with you completely. The Basketball New South Wales High Performance Manager, Curtis Sardi. Another Australian playing with the Dallas Mavericks. Chris Anstey was a Dallas Maverick. And I think Chris has been calling this one from a long way out, that Josh should be taken by Dallas. So it's a great result.
What draft pick was Chris? You recall? We get him on the line next week. Let's have a chat with him next week.
He's gonna really crack it that I don't know this. 20
in the 20s.
No, 16.
I guess
18.
Don't start guessing.
I'm guessing
18.
I'm gonna check that out for you. We'll come back and find out for certain. It is 18.
We'll get him on next week, because I'm
fascinated. Don't tell him about this.
I'm fascinated by the experience of what happens when you are drafted and you walk into those locker rooms. You know, walk in there, that must be such an intimidating moment.
We'll lock him in for next week. It's SEN Breakfast. Stay with us. Our feature chat of the morning was Supergates. Stuck at home and need a new fence, 25% off Supergates DIY kits. Call Supergates today. I was born
bold. Worth's app makes mobile ordering easy. Download it now. The value of coin increased by 2 cents today to $3.51. What is your coin worth today? Summer Breakfast.
So with thanks to Coin, shop local with coin.com.au, and you can win SEN Summer Breakfast. David King and Jack Heverin, you can join us across the hour, of course, 1-300-736-736. Gil McLaughlin to make an announcement today, Kingy, around 10:30 this morning, with an enormous amount of money that's been pledged to an enormous upgrade to the Marvel Stadium and the Docklands precinct as a whole. Looks pretty cool.
Well, it needs it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does need it. Will it bring the financial benefits that we're hoping? Because how is the Docklands going? Is it a thoroughfare? Is it somewhere you go to? You don't just find yourself at the Docklands. You have to be going to the Docklands, I find. So it's an interesting discussion. $200 million. It's a big spend.
It's a lot. We're going to talk about that shortly. And we'll give you the chance to have one last pitch to Gillon McLachlan. If you imagine that he's listening this morning, you can tell us what additions you would love to see made. But we're delighted to have in studios our McCafe catch-up this morning, Shane McInerney, who understands every single ounce of these rules back to front, umpired over 500 games, now retired. And, well, Shane, the last time I saw you, you were in this studio and we interviewed you upon announcing your retirement. You didn't have anywhere near as much facial hair as what you're rolling with now. Good morning.
Morning, Key. Morning, Jack. You know, can I honestly say that I actually pioneered the facial hair before it became COVID trendy. Yes, I was.
Almost,
that about 12
almost
ago.
Looks to me like you're trying to hide from the general public.
There's people out there with long memories, Kingy.
We're going to cover a bunch of ground with you, but one thing we wanted to, I guess, first and foremost, was just get your feel for the changes that were made earlier in the week. Are they significant changes at all? What did you think of them?
Yeah, look, obviously there were four changes there, and look, there's a couple that I might speak to in a couple of moments' time, but what I found most interesting was the rules that they didn't change, and in particular, holding the ball. I think we can all recall, you know, midway during the season, some frustration from players, from coaches, supporters, commentators, and the umpire themselves, where there was some real issues around, you know, a consistency or a predictability around holding the ball. And I think the AFL at the time said, in response to calls to, you know, change the rules, they said, listen, we're not going to change rules mid-season, but we'll have a look at it at the end of the year. So I think that's what's perhaps surprised me. So the fact that they haven't sort of come out with any changes might suggest that they're happy with the letter of the law. And so perhaps they're putting it back on the umpiring department to come up with a more consistent interpretation.
Oh, no. Not, are they?
I'm not sure how else you can interpret it, Kingy.
As so I said, so let's just say there was a change that needed to be made. What would that change look like?
It's not an easy one. And I guess it really comes down to perhaps, you know, what camp you're in. You know, are you in the camp about protecting the ball player?
Mm.
Because I've always thought that, you know, the argument for making prior opportunity of less time has been the increased skill level of the players. Well, certainly the same argument has to apply to the other side of the equation, and that's the tackle. I just don't think that, I think that as players' skill levels have evolved as well, that the execution of the tackle perhaps needs to be at a higher standard. I think, you know, how many push in the backs do you see now? Mainly because, you know, what a push in the back was 10 years ago. Players are well coached now to actually roll the player, but they're still thrusting a player forward. So certainly not suggesting that that part of the game hasn't been umpired well. I think it has. But I think that to get some balance back into it, again, I guess I'm in the camp of protecting the ball player, and I'd like to see more balance back to what is defined as an actual legal tackle.
What about prior opportunity, whether it become a team prior opportunity? So once you start a handball chain, if you're stopped in your tracks at some point in that handball chain, then it's a free kick against. That was discussed heavily over the last couple of seasons, rather than what we have now with did that individual player, upon, you know, obtaining possession, did he have enough time to dispose of the ball? Did he have prior opportunity? It becomes murky. Are you one that's an advocate for
certainly,
team prior?
Certainly there's occasions where you see a player who might be in danger of giving away a free kick on the ball, put his teammate under pump knowing that he's right there, he's going to get tackled, but we'll still end up with a neutral ball up.
Yeah.
So I think there is some merit in considering that. From an adjudication point of view, keeping a line of handballs as to has that team had consistent handballs, that's probably another challenge for the umpire to try and wrap his mind around. But look, I think all those things should at least be looked at some level, I think.
With the holding the ball, I mean, we could talk about this with every rule, but is it too open for interpretation at the moment? As in, the three of us sitting here right now, Shane, could look at an incident on the TV there and have three very different reads of it. Does it need to be a little bit more rigid?
What I think there does need to be is a really thorough education program, because I can watch the footy and I get frustrated with some of the commentators' interpretations, where I'm convinced some actually don't understand that there is a prior opportunity, and that if he hasn't had prior, then it's always a ball up. But, you know, he's had prior. Well, I don't think that that's really well understood as to what prior looks like. I mean, it's well understood by the umpires and I think by the clubs. I'm just not sure that the message is getting out there to the supporters who are pretty key to this as to what prior opportunity actually, that prior opportunity still does exist. But, you know, there's still the call that, oh, he didn't kick it, didn't hand pass it, therefore it must be holding the ball or dropping the ball. Not the case.
No, and that's what we're – but that's the discussion, isn't it?
Mm.
We're trying to get away from having all these disclaimers.
Mm.
Did he have prior? Did he effectively disposable? Did he do this? And just having an easier way for both the fans and the umpires to understand what we're trying to do.
Oh, look, I think if you wanted to make something more black and white, which I think is always something that, you know, should be looked at, certainly that is something that you could explore. That if you're in, that if you've got possession of the footy, right, so you're entitled to be tackled, you must kick or must hand pass. But yeah, that is taking the game into a zone that is really about not encouraging the ball player, but more encouraging the tackler. So you'd have to be careful as to how that, what the after effects or the flow on effects could be. But if you want to make it black and white, it's certainly one way that you could do that.
Is the standard of umpiring at a level that you're comfortable with? What did you have you thought that the umpiring has matched the levels that we'd hoped?
Look, I think everyone acknowledges that, you know, it's the toughest game in the world to officiate and so forth. I think that it's the type of caper where you really need 10 years in the game. I mean, I look at the NFL. I don't know. I guess not because it's summer and there's no other code to watch, but you look at who their officials are. You know, after 10 years officiating in the NFL, they still consider you a rookie.
Mm.
And I think that's perhaps the way where our game's going as well. And I think that it's not surprising that you see at the pointy end of the year, who are the guys that are getting the finals? You know, they're the guys that have had, you know, 30 finals, 35 finals, you know, the guys that have done 4, 5, 6 grand finals, the guys that have done 350 plus games. And I think that's probably where I think, you know, how do you support the younger guys to become better? Look, I think that's probably what the coaching challenge and the resourcing challenge at the AFL is at the moment. And I know they've certainly put in place a number of people in roles to accelerate that as much as you can. But as we know, there's only one test out there, 2 o'clock Saturday.
Mm. Mm. What's it? Just try and help us explain. We go through, obviously, and we see and we hear players so often talking about what their Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday looks like with video analysis and working with their line coach, et cetera, et cetera. What's that like from an umpiring point of view? So say you'll have your game on Saturday, you'll do your recovery and all that sort of stuff. What does that breakdown early in the week look like for you?
Well, look, I think where we've gotten to this year has been a pretty unusual year. So for the guys that committed themselves to being part of the season, and for most of those, it was, you know, who have full-time jobs, certainly committing themselves up into the hub. I think, you know, when originally all this started moving, they were told to pack for 18 days, yeah, about 100 days, 110 days. I hope the laundry was on high rotation. you know, they still found themselves there. So I think what came to pass this year was probably quite unusual. Of course, they did bring in the ARC, which was a new assessment process, which I think, you know, they're still working their way through to make sure that the ARC and the coaching team are well aligned in what their interpretations are. But I think this year is probably a really, you know, unusual year to talk about what was a normal week.
What do you make of the new manning the mark? So once that mark is set, then it obviously can't move laterally to deny the ball carrier his opportunity to play on or to use the full scope of what's in front of him.
Mm.
What are your, is that an easier thing to umpire? Because I get the feeling that we're going to have a spate of 50 metre penalties, and it's almost going to get to the point of ridiculous. I'm worried about that already.
Well, look, it's certainly a continuation of the strategy the AFL's put in place about providing some sort of incentive for the player with the ball to take on more risk to put it into the corridor. I think if you have a think about the 10-metre protected rule that came in, the idea there was to stop that artificial man on the mark 5 metres to the side from blocking off that centre corridor. You think about perhaps just the last couple of years where they've encouraged the guy with the football in a set kick situation to take a more square on position, because I think people would have heard umpire called east-west when the mark's outside the 50, again to try and square him up to get him closer to that centre corridor, because at the moment, you know, it's the man on the mark that really influences where the next passage of play goes. And what we've seen, the player obviously, you know, take the long kick down the line. There's a contest of 8 or 10 players. It gets punched out of bounds, stoppage, boundary throw in, away we go. So I think this change, I guess, is part of a story that they're trying to, or a strategy rather, that they're trying to make it more attractive for that guy with the footy to make more attacking type of decisions. Now, from an officiating point of view, you know, umpires have always controlled where the level of the mark is. Now they're being asked to control the spot. So what's perhaps more interesting to me might be what the workaround that the clubs are already thinking about. And I'm sure there's, you know, I know we've had rule announcements and it's the detail that we need to work through. But, you know, do you have that player on the mark stand 1 metre back from the mark? Does that he still have the same license then to move that laterally across the mark that they're trying to stop? But as far as a spat of 50s, look, you know, I think what we saw with the protected 10 metre, you know, it started off as 10, to be honest with you, as the season rolled past last year, and it's a couple of years of implementing this, it's probably 6 or 7. And I think, you know, there is a reluctance from the umpire to pay a 50-metre penalty. I mean, that's a big decision, and you can pretty much put any 50-metre penalty on the ground, really gives you a really good scoring opportunity. So, and we know that the scrutiny that comes under, you know, commentators and people saying, oh, how can you have a 50-metre because he's gone a step and a half laterally. Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to be something that's going to be, you know, something to watch, Kingy. So it's certainly another administrative task for the umpire. I know, advice to any players out there that want to stand marks, I'd be standing the spot. I don't think I'd be taking the umpires on, particularly early in the season, as to how far can I push it. You know, we're saying 1 step. Do they really mean 1 step, or is it 1.5 steps? Or perhaps it's 2 steps, because it's a big decision to make at any particular space on the ground.
Shane, can you stick around?
Certainly.
Don't look like you're in any sort of rush this morning.
I'm just enjoying the human interaction. I can't handle another Zoom meeting or Skype meeting.
No, I think we've all just about had enough. Kingy, go and grab him an instant coffee as well. Yeah. See if you can sort Shane out. Stick around, more with Shane McInerney coming up next.